Welcome to Season 15 of the Art of Teaching podcast. I'm Matthew Green, and I'm so grateful that you've joined me today. Before we get started with our discussion, I would like to acknowledge the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of this land on which I'm recording, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. I acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples on this land. Today I have the pleasure of sharing a recent conversation that I had with Ricky Cradolfa from Amplify Music. Amplify was co-founded by Ricky and his wife to ensure that every student has access to contemporary, inspiring, and engaging music lessons that meet the curriculum. We talked about so many things in this conversation, including his time as the lead vocalist for City Riots, an indie rock band from Adelaide, the power of music to unite us, Amplify, and lessons from building a family business. I hope that you get as much out of this discussion as I did with the incredible Ricky Cradolfa. Ricky, welcome to the podcast. Mate, thanks so much for joining me. Where are you phoning in from?
Excellent, buddy. Thank you for having me. This is really exciting. I am currently in our Amplify office over in Surrey Hills in the city. And everyone has gone home and it's pretty quiet. And I've been chilling and waiting for the moment to jump online with you and catch up.
Thank you, mate. I so appreciate it. Quite possibly the most important question. You are in the heart of the coffee culture in Sydney and Surrey Hills right now. What's your coffee order?
I've been doing the espressos, if I'm honest. But you know, I do love a cappuccino. Okay. And I feel like a cappuccino is sometimes brings a lot of happiness, is underrated, because how can you not like coffee with a bit of chocolate on top? And I feel like it's not celebrated enough. I can go either way, depending on how well the kids slept the night before.
All right. Good to know. Yeah. One of my favorite coffee shops in the world is Single Origin, which is right in Surrey Hills.
I know it.
And it is amazing. I was very tempted today. I was in the city with my kids. I was tempted to take a very significant detour and go to Surrey Hills and get a coffee, but I just couldn't. I just had to get them home. They were going nuts.
I know the feeling.
Is there a book, Ricky, that you have read recently that's caused you to stop and reconsider a few things in your life? Could be within your sphere of expertise, or it could be more.
I've got quite an eclectic taste. I know this is an education kind of lens podcast. Fine. So obviously, I read a book called In Teachers We Trust by a mate named Parsi. Because I felt like if we kept hanging out, and he was eventually going to ask me if you've read my books, so I thought I better read one. Yeah. And I was quite shocked because I thought it was going to be something that was kind of like way out and kind of like kind of completely blow my mind. But to be honest, it was amazing. But a lot of it was like, I was like, this is great. This is pretty obvious. Mm. And kind of made me think, why aren't we doing more of this? Yeah. So that was one thing. I also, to be honest, I read a really great book. I read was also the Mark Webber bio, Australia's all-time greatest Formula One drivers, called True Grit, and just the determination and the risks he took in his life to follow his dreams in a ruthlessly competitive
amazing
was quite inspiring.
Amazing. Well, I'll make sure, Ricky, I put links to those books in the show notes so people can read along.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
If you could have a dinner party with anybody, who would be there? Your family don't count in the head count, so I don't want to get you in trouble there. But who would you love to sit down with and have a meal?
Being quite obsessed with music and performance, I was thinking Paul McCartney would be great. And if Paul McCartney's there, then Dave Grohl would also be great because they're also friends, so it wouldn't be super awkward. And also, like, probably some of the most, really the most amazing musicians with such incredible longevity in the industry. Yeah. And then for some inspiring education lens, I think Sir Ken Robinson would be quite incredible. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ken. I'm sure you are.
I am. Unfortunately, he passed away quite recently, mm-hmm. and he was a mentor to a good friend of mine, Richard Gerver. Yes. And I've done a couple of interviews with him, and he just speaks so highly of Sir Ken, and it was a real it's a real loss, I think, to our planet not to have Ken along with us anymore.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But it was kind of both present and past.
Yeah,
people, was that right?
We could have, like, yeah,
yes, okay. I'm still within the
absolutely
rules.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that would be a wonderful dinner party. I'd love
yeah,
to.
So that's three. I think I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan, so I think Stevie Nicks would be great.
Right.
And I tell you what, I don't want to sound cliche with this, but I just find Michelle Obama just so wonderfully inspiring and such a powerful woman. Yeah. And she would have some great backstories, you know, like things that you would have seen, just general banter that would have gone down in the White House.
Yeah.
So I think, that'd be a pretty cool eclectic mix of kind of leaders and musicians and thought leaders.
That would be, that would be amazing. And, one last question, just getting to know you. What's something that you've changed your mind about?
I've changed my mind about Test cricket because when I was growing up, I just thought it was just boring. By the time I got older that, that short form cricket would take it over and be phased out because people just don't have time to put 4 days aside to follow cricket. But the more I got into it, the more I appreciated the strategy and the calculations of the game and just the sheer ability to be able to, mm-hmm. as a bowler, bowl that fast for that long.
Amazing. Amazing.
So I've changed my view of Test cricket.
Right.
From one which was boring to one which was like incredibly fascinating and exciting.
Fantastic. Yeah. I remember I was born in the UK and we came over here in 97. And I think just before we came over, there was a famous Australian that was being debuted in the Ashes, which was Shane Warne. Yeah. And I remember seeing him play at Trent Bridge, which was where I was from.
Yes.
And he just captivated the whole of England, and every single a young English cricket player wanted to be Shane Warne. Everyone was making fun of the Australian accent. Yeah. And I remember we had never seen anything like that. And I just sat for days watching Test cricket and was just absolutely captivated by this secret weapon from down under. But it's, you definitely get into it. Test cricket is, it'll get you. And it looks like you caught the bug.
Yeah. And I never thought I'd be sucked in. But and even what we're talking about, we might talk about that a little bit later, but that ability for someone to come in and kind of reimagine things and change the game and engage and just not be boring and stand out from the crowd. I think we see that in Shane Warne as a sports person. You can see it with music and any form of creative arts, but also in education. So I think that's a,
I love that.
It's a really exciting trait
and
something I'm quite passionate about.
Would you say that you were a disruptor?
No one's asked me that before, Matthew. You put me on the spot. I don't think so. No, I'm not a disruptor. I wouldn't consider myself a disruptor because I feel like sometimes disruptors get too sidetracked with saying things that are controversial to get a reaction. I'm more about kind of reimagining the way that music in particular is viewed and working in a more collaborative approach to help and support people to be the best they can be with the ultimate goal to create the best possible experience and outcomes for kids in a classroom. And I think at the end of the day, at the end of the day, any principal, any leader, any educator who is kind of worth their weight has the student at the focal point of everything. And so I try not to get too distracted.
Yeah.
By saying things that can disrupt, because it can kind of take the conversation and go on a tangent. Yeah. So it's better to kind of bring everyone together and collaborate and her really robust, honest conversations. But also, I think it's important to be able to say what you really believe, what you feel. And I feel like I'm slowly starting to do that, because I do feel like I'm in a place where I'm fortunate enough to be able to see lots of different scenarios and things play out in schools and classrooms, and I experience enough to be able to see what works.
Yeah.
And,
great.
But that also gets me excited, you know, knowing we're onto something that perhaps is a bit different, but it can have a really big and positive effect on a child's experience in a classroom.
So, Ricky, for those people that aren't familiar with what you do and Amplify and all the amazing work that you do around music education, can you just take us through a little bit of a snapshot or a bio or a profile of how you got to where you are today?
Sure. You mean in the context of being a person and a musician and working in education, or just Amplify?
Yeah, well, I think it would be, I mean, it'd be interesting. So did you train as a teacher? Is your background's in education?
No, so funny enough, no, I didn't specifically train in education. I spent a lot of time in schools teaching music and teaching in small groups and one-on-one and classrooms. But I guess, to take you back, I mean, I grew up in a house where music was always played and
really valued. Right.
And my dad used to play drums a little bit. And I remember going to primary school, and I remember that our principal used to play guitar, but there were no other kind of instruments in the school, but I really wanted to play guitar. And so
this is in Adelaide, is that right?
Yes, in Adelaide, yeah. I grew up in Adelaide.
Yep.
Yeah. And so the only way I could get music lessons is if I walked across the road to the high school. So I did that in my lunch break and was the only kid in school playing guitar. And all I knew is that it made me feel really cool. It made me feel really great. Like, I was this kid that stood out from the crowd because I had a guitar in a case, and people would look at me and be like,
oh, that kid's cool.
You know? And so that was really special to me. And then when I went to high school, obviously in high school, there's more structure around opportunities for things like music. And I was kind of involved in the bands and things there. I wasn't really super passionate about the bands, but I knew I loved music.
Hmm.
And then I went to university and I actually studied science and did a science degree. And I actually did this study, with the group of researchers that then was written to a paper. And it was on comparing the plasticity of the brain of musicians compared to non-musicians, and looking at if, in fact, people who have kind of trained in musical skills or have experienced music in some form of their lives are able to learn tasks cognitively quicker than other people.
Fascinating.
And we had all the little clip-on squidgy things on the brain, on the person's head, and we were measuring what we call in science action potentials. So in the brain. So it was cool, and that was kind of my first foray into kind of studying what happens with music, and also I just had a general passion for science because I just thought it was cool.
Nice.
So I finished that, and then I would look back at music, and I was still trying to find my place, and I knew I loved music, but all of my experience in school in terms of a classroom music experience was pretty non-engaging, wasn't super exciting. I didn't really enjoy it, to be honest. And that to me was really interesting because I knew I loved music, but I didn't love learning about it at school. And I felt there was something odd there.
Bit of a mismatch between.
So anyway, what I did know is that I wanted to play guitar, I wanted to be in a band, and I really wanted to have a song on the radio. And so my brother started learning drums. He jumped on the drums, and then two mates from uni we met.
Is this City Riots?
Then we formed a band called City Riots.
Yeah.
And then, long story short, you know, I was like, how can I find people that know about my band? You got to have a song on the radio. We saved up some money, went and recorded a song. I then flew to Sydney at the time, went to the ABC studios and just wanted to meet the radio programmer. at the time, his name was Richard Kingsmill. So he's quite an influential guy in the industry, because essentially if he gets behind your band and plays your song, you can kind of make your band quite popular. So I didn't know that's not actually what you're meant to do. You're meant to like have a proper publicist and a whole kind of plan behind it. Well, I just turned up with my CD and he saw me. He let me into his office. He chatted to me. He played the song and he's like, this is actually pretty good. And then like the next week he played it on the radio. And then they played it every day for like months. And then I did, and I thought, this is fun. Let's do that again. So I wrote another song and did that. Anyway, played it, and then that kind of started the band, got to tour the world, have a really great time.
Amazing.
And when I wasn't on tour, my part-time job was going to my local school to work with kids and teach. And then
love that.
When I guess the band started to wind down after a number of years touring and life responsibilities start to change, I was still really passionate and active working in schools. And it was around then I identified that music was something that just wasn't really done that well. And it made me reflect on my time at school and in that point where I wasn't really, didn't enjoy music at school. And I realized that not much had really changed. It actually perhaps gotten worse in the fact that it became more inequitable. So it was more driven by people who could afford their child to have music lessons. It was still as unengaging as it was when I was at school. Or ultimately, schools who don't have access to a music teacher just were not able to teach music. Mm. I thought that was quite crazy and I wanted to do something to try and change it. So
I love that.
That's when.
And I wonder why that is. I wonder why we tend to kind of organize subjects hierarchically with English and maths and science towards the top. I wonder why creative arts and say dance and drama and those kind of subjects get sort of placed under like at the bottom. Do you have any thoughts on that? Why do we do that? Is it just, do you think that creative arts is harder to measure?
Yes. Yeah. And things that we can measure, it gives us a reason to validate that they're important. And then, and then if we can then base, I guess, importance on that around standardizing those measures and testing, then, and then it drives certain fundings in areas, then, it starts to change the focus of why we're doing things and people view importance of subjects.
Interesting.
That's where it becomes challenging. But, it's these things that perhaps we can't measure that are often the most important. But also just the things that music outside of just what we believe or what we kind of traditionally think it brings to a child's experience in school that we haven't really put enough importance on, like collaboration and critical thinking and thinking outside the box and being able to take what you've learned and then apply it and be fluid and agile in different areas of learning. So students aren't just programmed to take information and rote learn. And, when we're looking at where we're going as with society in the future and the kind of skill sets and soft skills we need students to be able to work collaboratively in groups with different people from different backgrounds and different languages and be able to really be fluid and agile in the way we approach things, then I feel like music and the way we and what it can bring to a child's school can play a really important part in developing those skills.
There's so much in that, Ricky. I remember having a conversation with a maths professor from the University of New South Wales, and she was talking about the relationship that she has between music and maths, and I never thought of those two subjects being compatible. And she talked about the creativity and the awe and the wonder in mathematics. And I actually got quite annoyed and I felt really ripped off because I was like, where was this maths when I was at school? Like, where was this experience of this rich, beautiful, creative subject? And same as music. Like music, we kind of did like we did it for a term a year and that was it. And it was usually just the teacher banging together a tambourine and telling us to be quiet. And And I actually felt really ripped off because it just wasn't my experience of these subjects. And for so long, I just thought I wasn't a music person or I wasn't a maths person. And it wasn't until I did my master's through Western Sydney, and there's this incredible professor called Professor Deirdre Russell-Bowie. And she was just, she had basically, her lectures were just people that were 19 and 20 years old dancing around and creating these dramatic performances and playing music with different types of instruments or bits of wood that they found. And that was the, those lectures and that subject was so meaningful. And it was within that experience of with being with Deirdre Russell-Bowie that sort of those, I began to reimagine what was possible with music education. And I think from then I just decided I didn't want any other kid to have that. That experience that I had. And I'm sure you feel the same. I'm sure there's so many kids that are sitting in schools thinking music is not for me, and that's purely because of the type of, or the, their experience of music just doesn't match up.
That's right. That's
sad,
right,
isn't
it? It is. And you've kind of nailed it there, where there's kids who kind of look at perhaps what is happening in the classroom with music and they don't identify with it. And that's there's so many different facets to why and to how music can be improved in schools, but you know, that is one of them, where I guess traditionally music education has been viewed in a quite a narrow framework, which is traditionally an orchestral kind of format and repertoire of music. And I want to be careful how I say this. I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to be a disruptor. but you know, music is, it should be looked at such a more of a wider cultural diverse angle, you know, everything from, you know, looking at our songlines and First Nations music to our Islander music to Latino music to how that's influenced rock and pop and everything. And there's so much to music, and students who come from different backgrounds, there's ways that we can engage them that they can identify.
Love that.
Through music, that it's, to be honest, it's very, very rarely done. You know, I still go to schools in Western Sydney and they're trying to put violins in kids' hands and trying to think that these kids are going to be able to engage with this style of music and instrument. You know, it's that is outdated. You know, that's, for me, that's just
or bite your tongue.
Yeah, you know, when we're talking about the ultimately, you know, you've got to bring it back to the students. And when we're talking about student engagement and interest, and you were saying, when I think back to my time in maths, you kind of feel ripped off, you know, because it could be fun and done in a certain way. And I feel like we could do that with every subject in school. Mm-hmm. But I just try and stick in my lane and look at it with music. And every school I visit is, I learn something new, but I'm always absorbing and looking at what the kids are excited about, what they listen to, how they want to learn, what their backgrounds are, what does music sound like at home for them. And the more we can kind of start to connect those dots with music and education, then the deeper the learning is going to be and the more interested they're going to be, because they're going to be able to relate to it.
I think about my girls. We're talking about our kids, as all parents do before you hit record. And they are half Indian, South African and half English. And so I see them when they're over with their grandparents, or when they're at home, we've got music on. They don't need to be taught how to move or how to express themselves through dance or drama or musical instruments or spoons on the walls, and everyone's just going crazy. And it's a reminder, I think, that so many of these skills that we're talking about are actually innate in children. Absolutely. We don't have to teach it. And it's such a shame, I think, that we tend to get educated out of that, unfortunately, as we progress through school. And it's really sad. And I think about, like, all of the things that you're talking about music being a place of collaboration and critical thinking and understanding of cultures. And I think there's so many, we really need to shift our mindset about what music education is, because I think there's so much in that, isn't there, Ricky?
It's huge. Yeah, I mean,
we can't cover it all in an hour. It's huge.
We can't. And I said, I'm very fortunate to be able to visit so many schools around the country, meet so many wonderful principals and educators and leaders. But, you know, and they all have different stories around music. And, but a lot of them, in terms of their stories around music education, are not always, quite often, are not very positive. They either mention that they were forced to play the recorder and they hate the recorder. And recorders being this kind of symbolic instrument of music education, like it's the only instrument that you can play in a school setting, you know. And I'm not a huge recorder fan, as you probably worked out. But when they actually talk about music, then they actually talk about it really positively. Like they think about their first gig they went to, or the their song they had their first dance to, or their first concert, or whether the first record they bought, the posters in their wall. And what I try and do is get them to think about that initial emotional connection they had with music.
Love that.
And why, what attracted them to music at that point, and what got them excited about it, and what it was and how they felt, and then bring that into an education space.
Love that.
And then try and create that engagement and connection for students in a classroom through music and forget everything else. And then I think that's a really great place to start. And but that's what I mean about like one element of reimagining what music needs to look like in schools and in
I think we do that in some of the, and forgive the term, but we do that with some of those subjects that we have rated. We've kind of ranked those sort of top tier subjects, if you like, those English, maths and science. We start with engagement. Like we start with a hook and something that's really exciting that our kids will be engaged in. And I don't know why we're not doing that with music, because my kids are always singing songs in class. They're always talking about Taylor Swift and all the songs that she's releasing and all this stuff. And wouldn't it be great to start from there, like a point of engagement, a point of interest? And I do think, I always say to my team, like if we focus on engagement and we find that thing that engages our kid, your behavior is going to be better. Kids are going to be more excited to come to school. Attendance is going to go through the roof. And so I think, I don't know why we don't start that with the arts as well. And one of the things that we're really passionate about at our school, and you know our school well, is providing these experiences for our kids. So we're taking our kids to the opera house, we're taking them to see a performance, and because so many of our kids wouldn't have had that experience. And I know from experience taking kids to these things that they walk away going, oh my gosh, I never thought that was possible.
Yeah,
for them to see a live orchestra, or for them to sing along to a musical theater performance, or for them to hear the different types of instruments is just amazing. And it's a shame that we can't, I think, start with engagement with our kids, because there just seem to be that mismatch, doesn't there, between people's experiences at school and people's experiences with real kind of real life music. But
yes, yeah,
there's so much in that. Ricky, I was just wondering, what are some of the takeaway lessons from touring the world with City Riots? What was that like?
Well, you know, it's quite funny because...
What did you learn?
I never thought I would apply so much to what I learned from playing in a band, being in a band, to my life now running two music education businesses and just navigating life. And I feel there's something in that with, you know, with music itself. And everything from, you know, how I've gone about growing Amplify to schools is the same way I went about building the profile of City Riots when it was first starting out, which was, you play a gig, you put yourself out there, and two or three people come to the show and they have a really great time. Then they go back and they tell three of their friends. And then the next gig, you have like 9 or 10 people, 12 people come. And it's just been the same thing with Amplify. What I learned is to be able to troubleshoot and think on your feet and be put in really challenging situations and then work out how in the hell are you going to get yourself out of this.
It sounds like running a business. That's exactly what running a business would be like.
And these are the type of things that you cannot explicitly teach someone in a classroom, but what you can do is give them enough of a toolkit to be able to navigate their way out of these problems when they do arise. Mm. And I feel that's what music can do. And that's what being in a band did for me. Everything from, you know, we had our US tour and we realized we had to get proper touring visas and we had to send our passports away and go to Melbourne to have these interviews, and they were finally cleared, but we're flying out the next morning at 6 a.m. I had to work out how to somehow get my passport at 5 p.m. from the embassy in Melbourne to Adelaide so I could fly out the next morning at 6 a.m. And it was too late to organize a post. So it was everything from that to being in a tour van and breaking down literally in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Texas. And then it's literally like a reality TV show. Breaking in the middle of nowhere, and then someone goes, okay, now sort yourself out of this problem, you know? And then that to working out who the best person to talk to is to make sure you get yourself onto that tour that you really, really want to tour. And you just keep knocking on doors and calling and not giving up until you get that person. To just working out how to get your song on the radio. You know, there's no explicit teaching for that. You know, you've got trial and error and ask people and learn from different people and make a lot of mistakes and just keep moving forward. And the other thing I've learned is that doing things collaboratively and with other people is you always learn more than working on your own. That's also a lot more fun than working as a solo artist.
What did you learn about how music unites us? Because I think there's so much rhetoric at the moment about how different we all are and how the world is more divided than it is before, and that may be the case, but would you mind maybe speaking about how sort of you've seen music bring us together?
Yeah, I was I'll give you an example. I was on a walk. Actually, I've been trying to run a bit more to you know,
you're looking fit.
Keep my cardio up for when I do the school incursions. And I was live in Maroubra, and I was running along Maroubra, and there was a guy sitting on the back of his ute with the tail down, who's looking at the surf, and he's wearing a Smashing Pumpkins t-shirt. So for those who aren't familiar, there was a band in the 90s, they were called Smashing Pumpkins. They had this big album called Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, and it was a double album, and it was viewed as this quite a seminal cult album for that time that has lasted the test of time. And still has songs on it that I play on radio now. So this guy was wearing a t-shirt. This guy would be in his, say, mid-50s. I've never met this guy before. And I was kind of fast walking, meant to be running, but I was a bit tired. And I saw his t-shirt and I said, should I say anything? Oh, no, I won't. I was like, nah, bugger it. And I was like, hey, man, cool t-shirt, great band. Because there was in City Right, we had the privilege of touring with this band, the Smashing Pumpkins. So
that's amazing. Well,
and it was a great time of my life. So I just wanted to say to the guy, hey, cool t-shirt, great band. And at this point he was like, oh my goodness, you know, like one of my favorite, but how great are they live? Have you seen them? I saw them on the last tour here. It was the first time I saw them and it blew my mind. They played this song and, you know, I got their album when I was like 19. And he basically told me, you know, he told me things that you would never otherwise tell a stranger. And I also was wearing a band t-shirt at the time, The Living End. He's like, oh, hey, I like The Living End, aren't they great? Chris Chaney's one of the best guitarists of all time. And then we had like maybe a 5-minute chat and then went on my way. And it got me thinking, what else in the world could he have had on his t-shirt that would have instigated such an open, deep conversation outside of music? It was that kind of showed me that, just another reminder of the power of music and its ability to connect and unite people. This is someone I've never met before, and he's basically telling me his whole teenage and life story because I just acknowledged what was on his t-shirt because it's a band and something that really meant a lot to him. And I can't say, you know, if he had some kind of if he had the periodic table on his chest, you know, and I love science, but I don't feel he would have talked my ear off for 8 minutes around.
Isn't that interesting?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's one example. And, the other example is the Taylor Swift phenomenon, which I thought, to be honest, was just fantastic, that people were just so engrossed with the idea of wanting to be part of an experience.
Isn't it incredible?
Through music. That bringing people together of different race, different culture, different backgrounds, different ideologies, different sex, different religions, everything was removed. And it was just people wanted to be in the same space and experience something that you cannot do in any other way but being present
through
live music delivery. And, I mean, I can't – and there was no fights, no violence, no argument, nothing. And, I mean, there's nothing – I can't think of anything else in the world – that has the ability to do that.
And well, I'm a proud Swiftie. I've been to every one of her concerts apart from this one. I just couldn't get tickets. But I definitely, the last concert I was at, I thought, geez, this is out of my demographic now. Like I need to take my daughter's a little bit too young. So I said to them, next time she comes, we'll go. But I felt like I needed to take one of my kids there because I was just too old. But it was amazing. It was incredible. And like you said, it doesn't really matter how you feel about her or her music, but that ability to share an experience. Mm-hmm. And she's selling out these concerts back to back.
Mm.
Like all over the world. Like that's something really special. And I think and even just seeing, I do think we as a world, we need more things to bring us together and talk about our similarities as opposed to our differences. And I think music is an incredible way of doing that. I remember going to a first of many John Mayer concerts. And I went there with my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time. And now every single song on Room for Squares, which is his first album, has a memory attached to it. Like I was like, this is the time he came over and we cooked like lunch, or this is the time when he, and this song about, and the I think Continuum song about daughters, as a dad to two daughters, every time I listen to it I just start crying. But I think music has this ability to evoke these connections and emotions like nothing else. And it's really special. Are you a Swiftie? You respect?
Yeah, I mean,
I think we all are. Like,
I mean, you can't.
How can you not?
You can't really avoid it. And to the art of being able to have that many great songs that connect at that level has to be admired. Whether you like the songs or not, just the ability to be able to do that song after song, and have and get people to elicit that emotion is incredible. But you know exactly what you were saying as well, that the number of times I've jammed with people that I've only just met, and you just play and you're suddenly almost communicating in a language that is not words, you know, and it breaks down, like I said, what I said before, it breaks down all sorts of barriers, of whether it's ideologies or religion or language barriers, whatever it is. And also the other thing is that music is always all around us, from when we're a baby to, you know, when we sing to babies to comfort them and quiet them down or put them to sleep, or we put music on, or it's in movies to kind of elicit an emotion in a movie to help support the visual that we're seeing. It's in, you know, it's in shopping centers when we're doing shopping. It's, totally. It's in the car. It's literally, when you start thinking about it, it's literally everywhere. But when we go into schools and in classrooms, suddenly it's absent. And or more absent than perhaps was what it should be. And that's where I'm trying to make a difference, because I'm also aware that it's very, very easy for to make a lot of sweeping statements around the problems. And one thing I've always been really mindful of is that I don't want to say something but then not do something about it. And there's been so much research in the past around the benefits of music. And to be honest, I don't actually spend that much time. It's been quite nice. I don't actually spend that much time talking about the benefits of music because it's so well researched. Yeah. It's so well documented. And I feel like, to be honest, in a school setting, every principal I know or speak to knows the benefits of music. The biggest problem is they just don't know how to bring it in to schools. And that's why I wanted to do something about it, because it's all very well saying something, but to actually go, all right, how do we change this? And that's why I started Amplify.
I think I'd love to unpack what the great work that you're doing with Amplify in a moment. And I think just to follow up on what you said before, I saw an interview with on the Today Show, with Charlie Puth.
Yeah.
He made he's incredible at how he makes music out of everything. So he made music out of a loop or a tapping cup or something. Yeah. And I remember watching that, and I've watched that clip probably 100 times going, oh my goodness, like music is everywhere. Yeah. Sound and sound creation and communication through sound is something which isn't restricted to a period at school. Like it is everywhere. And it really, it seems like such a simple thing, but really made me start to think, wow, like you're saying before, like we experience this all of the time. And I'm a huge fan of Charlie Puth. I think he's amazing. I think
he's great.
He's just incredible. Ricky, I would love just to unpack some of the work that you're doing with Amplify. I am a huge fan.
Oh, thanks.
And for those people that are not aware, what is it and what are you trying to do with Amplify?
Sure. Well, in short, I'm trying to help principals and education leaders and anyone working in schools to reimagine how music education is approached and taught in schools.
Love it.
By making it really accessible, really engaging, really fun, really contemporary and exciting for kids to experience, but also really exciting for teachers to be able to teach and just remove a lot of the psychological barriers around what teachers think music needs to look like in a classroom. And so, I mean, it's, and I only work in primary schools. It's only primary school from kindergarten to year six. We're also with a focus of engaging Australian artists in the content to bring everyone from kind of King Stingray to Amy Shark, Zell Braithwaite, through them as artists, but also their music into the content, and make it, I guess, as accessible, like integrated into a classroom, into a mainstream classroom as much as possible, and really get teachers to believe that even without being able to play an instrument or without being musically trained, you can actually teach a really fun, engaging primary school lesson that meets curriculum outcomes.
Yeah,
and to move away from this traditional idea that you must have a music specialist in your school for that school to be able to teach music and meet music outcomes.
Yeah.
So it's all that together. I feel like music teachers are amazing people. But this idea that that there's enough music teachers to be able to deliver music in every school in the country is completely unreal. I mean, we don't have enough teachers to go around, let alone music teachers.
Yeah.
So this reliance upon music teachers, I'm trying to shift the narrative on that. But also, I feel like it kind of undermines a classroom teacher and kind of dilutes their ability and their efficacy in the classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, I see what classroom teachers teach in other subjects, and some of that content is like this, it's hard, it's challenging. But we were talking about before, when teachers understand the art of teaching, and a lot of it comes through that ability that teachers have to build relationships and understand their students and relationships with their students and know how those students learn, how to get the best out of them, their social interactions within the classroom, their learning challenges, that classroom teacher who's in the classroom with those students every day knows those students better than anyone. So when then that teacher is empowered and able to teach really easy and engaging music lessons for that class, then that experience is going to be much deeper and much the most exciting it can be with that child without having to need or rely on a music specialist coming in. So that's
great.
Really part of it. So essentially Amplify is a software platform that teachers log into and they access their music lessons for their year level that has really clear success criteria and learning intentions. There's an introductory video that is like a little TV show that introduces the fundamental concept. And then there's an array of different activities that the students that the teacher facilitates with their students to demonstrate, so students can demonstrate their learning. And then it's essentially mapped to the curriculum. Amazing. So it's like blending the compulsory curriculum part with really great, exciting music and activities that does not rely on the teacher being musically skilled to do.
It's so good. And one of the many things I love about it is that it's all there. You don't have to go searching for maracas or anything. Like, it's there. Like, everything you need is in that lesson. And it is engaging. I've done it with kids all across our school and every one of them loves it. And I think the thing that I'm really passionate about in education is seeing kids, that moment where their mind shifts and they go, oh, I'm actually good at music, or, oh, I'm actually a mathematician, or I am a writer. And it's the same thing. It's changing those paradigms and changing those mindsets, but just in music. It's great. It's really fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. And equally as exciting for me is from a teacher point of view, seeing a teacher in the classroom who would consider themselves traditionally non-musical, or who never thought they could teach a music lesson, or never expected that they would need to teach a music lesson, to now teaching a music lesson and feeling really great and confident about doing it is also really exciting to see. And when teachers feel really great about teaching something, then it kind of increases their confidence and makes them a better teacher. Yeah. And when they feel great about teaching something, it makes the whole experience all that much more exciting and deeper and happy.
Yeah. And
that's really special for me to witness as well.
Yeah. I love that. And Ricky, what's it like running a company? Because and the reason why I ask is respectfully, I imagine it's a very different schedule. You're not just jamming in a basement in Surry Hills and hoping for the best. I'm sure there's sort of two parts of your brain that are working. Like, what was that shift like going from, going into running a company? Because that is a whole nother thing, isn't it?
It really is. That could be in our podcast just in itself.
Especially
for someone who's innately a creative and, a creative musician like myself.
I didn't want to say that, but that's what I was thinking.
And it'd be remiss of me to come anywhere close to taking all the credit for Amplify. So it is, I'm a co-founder, but my wife is the other co-founder, Nat.
Yeah.
And she's an incredibly talented, driven, amazing operator and incredibly intelligent woman.
We complement each other very well.
Yeah. And so to be honest, it's quite an amazing skill set. A lot of people compliment on it, which is really nice. So kind of this blend between myself, who's kind of a creative and spends a lot of time in schools and in classrooms and like to think I understand how kids can learn and how to make the most kind of exciting music experience for them. And then Nat, who understands how to run a business and how to scale and how to make it sustainable and how to, I mean, we just really complement each other. But running a business is a beast in itself. It's, in one hand, it's incredibly exciting. And I've always, just like being in a band, you are kind of you're kind of at your own, you have the power of your own destiny, So you're kind of like, you can reach for the stars and follow your dreams. And as big as you want to go, it's only limited by your imagination. And I like being in control of our destiny.
That's really
exciting. But coming with that is a lot of risks and a lot of big decisions, whether it's on certain pedagogies or lessons or just big decisions on, now we have people working for us. So there's people's livelihoods that we need to make sure we're considerate of and manage. And this is people's jobs now, which is a big responsibility.
Yeah.
And just constantly taking time to reflect and acknowledge all the exciting things that happen at that time. But then we're always kind of trying to move forward, because I feel like if you're not moving forward, then you're going backwards. And so always looking at the bigger picture and looking at how we can make this not only something accessible for all kids in New South Wales and Australia, but around the world. And so the bigger your view gets and the bigger your reach gets, the more responsibility that takes on and the more you need to be accountable for, but also the more exciting it
gets. So what's it like working with your wife? and do you think you've sort of found that balance? I mean, it's almost 9 o'clock on a weeknight and you're still in the office. What's it like working with your wife? And also, like I said, do you feel like you've sort of got better at balancing those sort of dual responsibilities of many responsibilities of being a dad, being a partner, being a business owner?
Yeah.
It's tricky.
It's super tricky, and it definitely has its challenges. Has a lot of challenges, actually. And we're still learning and developing it all the time. But I think it's what we focus on is really identifying where we bring the value.
And that's right.
Identifying like where specifically I really bring value, but also realizing where I can't bring value and being okay with that. And I guess the same for Nat, although Nat is really great at bringing value at a lot of places. But, you know, there's always a place that she can't. And so I need to make sure I step up and, you know, for those parts. But also then as we grow, bringing on people to be able to complement and diversify your skill set. If everyone sitting at the table has the exact same skill set and is all have the same expertise, then there's going to be massive gaps that aren't being filled. So it's about understanding each other's skill set and where we really add value, but also then bringing on people who can really fill the gaps and complement us and really add value where we're not able to. And then just trying to be making sure that we are really present as a husband and wife when we're with our kids and not work overtaken.
That's hard, isn't it? Like,
I love
my job. I absolutely love it, but it can be all encompassing. And I think my wife's amazing. Is from a family of teachers, but decided to not go down that track. But she's very aware, I think, of some of the challenges. And I think I've seen too often it completely consume people's lives and you kind of forget what's important. And so I think it's good to remember that, the only reason why I get to do these big hours and all that kind of stuff is because the people that I care most about are okay. And there is that connection, but it's hard. Like, it's tough.
It is. It's hard. And you sacrifice a lot. And once again, I bring back the band analogy, but it's the same when I was touring in the band. I missed a lot of my friends' weddings because I was touring overseas. I missed all their 21st birthday parties. I missed my high school reunions. I missed all of that, but that's the sacrifice. And, you know, we try not to sacrifice time with our kids, but obviously there is time when we have to travel away together. And, you know, it's definitely not 9 to 5. We don't finish work at 5 and then go home and then not think about work. Either I do a pickup and Nat stays late, or we take turns in doing it. So we really try and support each other, and communication is really, really important. And talking about how we're feeling and what's bothering us and what needs to be done, and just making sure that we're supporting each other with those simple things at home as well, which Nat reminds me of a lot, you know, everything from organizing passports to doing making sure the school uniforms are ready to go for Monday. And
nice.
But the good thing is that we're super passionate about it and we really love what we do, but we can see the impact it's having. And when we need those times where things do get tough, but then you get an email from an AP and they've got all the feedback from the stage 3 kids saying, you know, this, I never thought music could be this fun, or it's made me feel really great about myself, or I wanted to come to school on Friday because I know we were doing Amplify, or, you know, teachers saying that it's made them feel really great about being a teacher again. So we get some pretty amazing, really deep feedback, which is really hits home. So that's really nice and helps us validate what we're doing, that all the sacrifices we're making and the risk we're taking is paying off.
That's really great. And Ricky, is there an area in your life, and it could be personally or professionally, that you feel like you're under investing in, something which you'd like to give a little bit more focus to? It could be anything. It could be fitness. It could be taking up craft. It could be anything.
Let me think. I'm under investing. Yeah, it would be.
You mentioned you're trying to run a little bit more, which is great.
Yeah, but that's not exciting. People don't want to hear about that.
I love running. I love it. Any opportunity to talk about running, but I won't steal your thunder. Is there an area?
One thing personally I struggle with is the changing of mindsets and learning to compartmentalize my thoughts, and running a business, and especially a music business where it's, you know, you're in a classroom sometimes, and I'm kind of engrossed in that experience of working with the students. And then when that finishes, suddenly it's a completely different mind shift when I need to go on a Zoom call that has more of a business lens on it, with an investor or something. It's the changing of really significant mindsets is what I really struggle with. And it's something I'm trying to learn how to do better. It's going from a kind of a creative mind to more of an analytical, strategic mind. But then, as we mentioned before, kind of looking at how Nat and I can lean on each other differently, okay. Help support.
Okay. Support. Okay. Mm. Ricky, I want to be respectful of your time. I'm aware we're talking about balance and it's almost 9 o'clock at night and you have a family to get home to. So just...
That's okay. No worries. I, you know what? You asked me before if there was a story that was funny or important, but I have a story that really resonated with me and I felt it was really impactful and it really hit home for me. And I wanted to share it because I feel like it's important. Please. And so one thing I like to do is visit lots of different schools and I touched on that before, because one thing I realize is the more schools you visit, the more you learn, because every single school is different, has different challenges, has different kids. And so last year I made an effort to visit lots of schools and I went out to teach for a week in Moree. And around this time, Moree was kind of getting some interesting media around some of the challenges happening at a youth level. So I went out to teach in Moree for a week and I basically taught music at Moree Public School, and which is a brilliant school, amazing teachers doing incredible things and wonderful, wonderful kids. And I taught music there on a rotation of different classrooms and for a whole week. And one thing I like to do is try and get students involved in demonstrating an activity. And I really, really love getting students who I feel wouldn't usually get identified or picked out of a class to come in and demonstrate something, with the goal to put them in front of their peers with me supporting them and essentially get them doing something that makes them feel really good in front of their peers and for their peers to maybe view them a bit differently, really, really positively, and demonstrate how great this student has the ability to be. So I was going around the room and there was the kids were sitting in the middle, and around the outside I had different pods of different instruments that we're going to experiment on and rock a tune on. And I could see a boy down the back who I didn't realize until later was from the support unit. And he was sitting there and he seemed quite isolated and not really integrated into the group. And I also got the idea that he finds himself in a little bit of trouble sometimes. And so as I made my way around to the instruments, he was sitting around the back, and because as I made my way around the back, I asked him if he wanted to come up and demonstrate how this instrument worked. And the moment that I knew I picked the right student was when the teacher stood up and kind of like chaperoned the student over to me, like some kind of extra security or something. And I was like, it's okay.
I got this. Yeah,
I can handle this. And I asked his student to come demonstrate how he thinks his instrument worked. And I think it was a tambourine. So he shook it and then he hit it. I was like, yeah, nice. All right. And then we made our way through the different instruments to eventually we got to the guitars, and there was a pot of guitars. And I said, have you ever held a guitar before? And he said, no, we shook his head. He wasn't super outwardly verbal. And so I sat him down. I kind of roughly showed him how to hold the guitar. And he kind of just naturally went like, zing, 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 zing. I was like, oh, cool. All right, keep going. And then I kind of showed him like a really easy chord. And he kept going, zing, 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 zing. I was like, hey, keep that going. And then one of the other teachers who was sitting there, I just put a bass guitar in his hand and gave him the note. And together they're going like, zing, zing. And I got all the students to stand up and go stomp, stomp, clap, stomp, stomp, clap. And then I had a mic and I was like, let's just roll this. So I grabbed a mic and started singing like, buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise playing in the streets. And it got to like, we were right. And all the kids are like, I had never showed him this song.
I loved it.
Like, mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can. And then they're like, And then at this point, all the kids in this stage three class are standing up, stomp, stomp, clapping in time with this kid who has never integrated with these kids before, never really done anything with them, is now standing at the front of them holding electric guitar playing the chords to We Will Rock You. At this point the principal walks in And she kind of like almost like dropped her folder, grabbed out her phone and started recording while they're like tears streaming down her face of like, oh my God, like this is incredible. We need to capture this to send home to the parents to be like, not only is this child at school today, but he is integrating, kids are being engaged by what he's doing, and he's kind of almost, he's got a purpose in this session. And then the AP walks in and they're crying and someone's called the office for these other people to come in. So we've rocked the song a fair bit. And then at the end we finish and it does a big rock and roll ending and all the teachers are crying. And I was like, all right, that's great. And I was like, did you have fun? He's like, yeah, that was really great. And everyone was clapping and no one's ever acknowledged this kid before. And we finished that session and it was lunchtime and this child wanted to stay during lunchtime to keep playing. And there were some other kids who was never really associated before who wanted to come in and play with him. And they jumped on the drums and some of the bass guitar and some percussion instruments. And they started jamming and working on a song. And the teachers were just in complete and utter shock that this has happened to this child who has a lot of issues going on at home, far more than I could ever appreciate. And purely simply through music. Now, this child felt he had a purpose. He was validated. He felt identified in this group and now was interacting with other people. And I think the leadership team just sat there for the whole lunch, just watching this jam play out with the child. And I reflected on it and I was like, you know, I didn't bring any of these instruments into the school. They were already here. I didn't write We Will Rock You, that's Queen. I didn't really do anything that in my eyes was like revolutionary. All I did was kind of provide a conduit between a song and an experience through music for this class and the kid. And that's when I was like, wow, it's so simple but it's so powerful. And that is the really wonderful thing about music.
Ricky, that seems like a great place to finish. I don't know how we can top that last story, but thank you for taking the time to talk to me today and for the amazing work that you and the team are doing at Amplify. And even more than that, thank you so much for your heart and your commitment and your passion and your dedication for music. And I hope that there are going to be plenty more stories of that, of kids that have discovered the awe and the wonder and the beauty of music through your work. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate you chatting with me tonight, and now go home and be a dad.
Thanks, Manny. Thanks for taking the time. It's a real honor to be on it. So thanks for having me on, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast episode today. It's a privilege to get to share these conversations with you and continue to invest into our incredible profession. If you have a few moments, please do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or through whichever platform you're listening today. If you wouldn't mind also hitting the subscribe button and sharing it with your networks, it would really help to get the word out to as many educators as possible. There are different ways to connect in the notes below, including links to the website, the Facebook group, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. It means the world.